Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 388 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by a former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing good, my man. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay, my man. Thank you for asking. Let's dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. It took place at the Place Bell in Laval, Quebec, Canada. I'm going to try to whiz through this week's show. Last week, there was a hell of a lot of upsets. We're going to go over them here in the review part. Let's start with this one, like I say. Jean-Pascal, friend of the show, former world champion, now 36-7 with a draw. It seemed like Father Time caught up with him in one night here, really. The 40-year-old Pascal lost the unanimous decision there over 12 rounds to Michael Effert, who I actually hadn't seen fight before, but I'd heard from reliable sources that he was absolutely useless. So I expected Pascal to have way too much, especially in Canada. And obviously there's been question marks about Pascal being a clean fighter and, you know, and all the rest of that stuff. So I didn't think that Effert would have a chance in Canada, but boy, oh boy, I was so wrong. And he dominated the fight there. And Jean-Pascal, that's probably the end of the road for him. And like I say, I think it was potentially a final eliminator, maybe just an eliminator. But yeah, that's it for him. I don't think he's going to be world champion again. On the undercard, another massive upset as well. Jessica Kamara, who really, like I say, probably deserved the decision against Kali Reis about a year to 2 years ago. She's now 10-4. She was actually TKO'd in round four against Carla Ramos Zamora, who's now 10-9 with a draw. That was a real shock there. I mean, this was just like a nothing fight. I mean, I'd never ever heard of Carla Zamora in my life. And, you know, I'd seen Jessica Kamara, like I say, in my opinion, beat Kali Reis and not get the decision. So for me, she was like a world level female fighter, but like I say, knocked out here in round four. And I couldn't believe it when I saw that one, to be totally honest with you. Moving out now to the town hall in Dudley, West Midlands, United Kingdom over here. Another, I won't say it was an upset, but it was certainly a terrible, terrible decision in the end. We saw Ilyaz Ahmed now 10-2 with three draws. It was for the vacant Commonwealth and British super flyweight titles. He got in there with Marcel Braithwaite, now 14-3 with a draw. It ended in a split draw over 12 rounds. Terry O'Connor with an extremely questionable scorecard in favour of Ahmed, which even the commentators, who were clearly biased to Ahmed and weren't even hiding it, you know, like this was a show that was a small hall show on YouTube, and the commentators literally said, "We both want Ahmed to win. He's the home fighter, he's with the home promoter, and we want to see him win. We always want to support the promoter's fighters," which I kind of thought was a bit okay. They're clearly, you know, not impartial, you know, they're siding with one guy. And even both of those two commentators both scored it to Braithwaite, and I've got no idea what Terry O'Connor was watching. A shock, a real shock there. I thought that the pressure that Ahmed, you know, that style he's got, the pressure that he can put on, I think, or I felt, could potentially win a few rounds, but certainly didn't deserve the card that Terry O'Connor handed in. And I think Braithwaite has been robbed there, actually, of the victory. Like I say, one card, a draw, and the other cards either way. But wow, that that Terry O'Connor card. I've heard some people say it's the worst scorecard they've ever seen. Moving out now to Italy in Roma, Lazio over here. Friend of the show, Mikey McKinson, now 24-1. He was able to TKO in round 5 Sergio Carvalho, now 13-2. So a knockout win there for McKinson. Great for him. He doesn't rack them up too often. Moving out now to the Agenda Arena in Dubai over here. We saw friend of the show, John O'Carroll, move to 24-2 with a draw. It was a unanimous decision there over 10 rounds against the teak tough Miguel Mariaga, now 30-7. Good to see John O'Carroll fight again. You know, it was quite an exciting fight at times, not throughout the entirety, but there were moments, I think, where Mariaga landed good shots and had Jono in a little spot of bother here and then. But yeah, for the most part, Jono outboxed Mariaga, which, you know, I think most people would have expected would happen anyway. But yeah, there were moments that Mariaga had and they made it exciting, but John O'Carroll just, yeah, boxed, you know, quite a good, smart fight, really. Floyd Mayweather on the commentary was quite funny, unintentionally funny, you know, obviously fantastic fighter, but boy oh boy, no good at commentary at all. I just don't think he could be bothered. He's sitting there saying that Miguel Mariaga is known as King Kong, which that is actually John O'Carroll. And the funniest part was that he said John O'Carroll needs to get on with his career now. He's 36 years of age, to then be corrected by Ray Flores, who said no, he's actually 32, and then was corrected by me on Twitter, who confirmed his real age of 30. So they had him at 32 and 36, the poor guy. But it was just funny because Floyd got it really wrong, and then they tried correcting him with another wrong age, which was just, I don't understand it. Google is free, ladies and gents. And the main event over here, Jarrell Big Baby Miller, 25-0 with a draw going in, now 26-0 with a draw. TKO there in round 6 against Lucas Big Daddy Brown, 31-4. Big Baby versus Big Daddy, like we said. I didn't expect it to go 6 rounds. I didn't really expect it to go past 4 rounds, you know, especially... I mean, I thought that anyway, but especially seeing the pair weigh in as well. Obviously, Jarrell Big Baby Miller came in really heavy again. I think he was around about the 330 pounds mark. And I'm not entirely sure what Lucas Brown weighed in at, but I heard someone say that the combined weights of both guys was 610 pounds. I don't know if that's 100% accurate or not, but... yeah, I mean, incredible. Just to confirm, no, actually, that is 100% right. Miller was 333, and Lucas Brown was actually 277. So there we go. That's huge. Yeah, 610 pounds. That's incredible. Wow. But yeah, like I say, I mean, Jarrell Big Baby Miller didn't really impress me. It led to Dillian White sending a tweet saying that Jarrell Big Baby Miller is so, 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 so bleep. I guess you can fill in the blanks there. He wasn't impressed. And even though he did get the win, it was more through Lucas Brown being exhausted. And, you know, we knew that that was going to be the case. Lucas Brown, as I thought, would come to just throw bombs from the first bell. To be totally honest, I think he was quite cautious. Both guys were in the first round or two, which was quite surprising. I thought we'd see a fast start. But... nonetheless, I mean, it was never going to go the distance. We both agreed on that one, Eddie. And yeah, Jarrell Big Baby Miller gets the win. He's called out Anthony Joshua. He's called out a couple of other guys, you know. But yeah, still undefeated, like I say. But I just didn't think it was that impressive. He took a lot of shots. And I think he's got a fantastic chin, Miller, which actually makes him kind of, I guess, a bit more exciting just for that aspect in itself. But yeah, Lucas Brown hit him with some really good shots, and to be honest with you, Lucas Brown took some really big shots as well. And you know, both guys actually showed good chins. And yeah, it went 6 rounds, like I say, longer than I thought. But the TKO came for Jarrell Big Baby Miller, mainly through Lucas Brown just being absolutely exhausted. Floyd Mayweather did call that one correctly on the commentary. And Lucas Brown just took a hide in the last round or whatever. He took a lot of punishment actually throughout the fight. You know, he was really busted up. Good to see both guys embrace after the fight as well, back in the hotel. You know, I think Lucas Brown's a really top quality guy. Both guys, by the way, friends of the show. Moving out now to the Newcastle Arena in Newcastle, Tyne and Wear over here. Let's start with the undercard. Pat McCormack now 4-0, a TKO for him in the 8th and final round against Dario Sochi, who's now 15-8 with 2 draws. A questionable stoppage, really, from the referee. Sochi was complaining, you know, he wanted to go the distance. He almost did go the distance, and the stoppage kind of came out of nowhere. I actually thought it would go the distance because, you know, Sochi'd only been stopped by Troy Williamson, and I think that was in about round 10 of their fight. So I didn't think Pat McCormack would get him out of there, but by hook or by a crook he did. You know, really impressive, of course. Elsewhere on the card, Salomon Dacres. I'm going to hold my hands up here and say I can't believe he was actually in an entertaining fight. It was a good fight here against Robert Ismay, who certainly came to give it a good go. You know, he went out on his shield in the end. A TKO in round 2 there for Dacres. Now 6-0. Robert Ismay now 11-1. It was for the vacant English heavyweight title, so Dacres has now got that. But, you know, it was exciting. Like I say, Ismay was throwing bombs, really, from the first bell. And Dacres, you know, I liked his movement, his elusiveness. And, you know, he came back and, it was never going to go long when you saw how quick Ismay tried to start the fight. Hopi Price now 10-0, a unanimous decision against Thomas Masson. Again, no real surprise in that one. That was, you know, that was my pick. Thomas Masson now 20-6 with a draw, like I say. Only been knocked out the one time to Daigo Higa, who I think had a 100% knockout streak running at the time. So, you know, and that one was for a world title. So Hopi Price is a, you know, a hell of a lot of levels down from that. It was for a belt, though, the WBA Continental Super Bantamweight title. That's now Hopi's. Some people frustrated online that, you know, Hopi didn't go through the gears and try and get him out of there. I think that Masson is a really tough guy, and I think Hopi Price, you know, it wasn't the first time he was scheduled for 10 rounds. It was the second time, but that other time he was scheduled for 10 rounds was just one other occasion, and I think he knocked the guy out in like 2 rounds. But he would have known this is a tough, durable guy. I'm probably going 10, and I think he was saving a bit, you know, to make sure he could go 10 and not get, you know, completely exhausted. So yeah, I can understand it, you know, that there's people that just weren't happy, but I didn't really think he put a foot wrong. He dominated the fight, and the main event was a cracker as well, a brilliant learning fight for me, for Cyrus Pattinson, now 6-0. It was a really good fight with Chris Jenkins. Jenkins now 23-7 with 3 draws, way better than his record suggests. The towel come in round 9. It was for the vacant WBA International Welterweight title. Chris Jenkins was in the fight, you know, he was in the fight probably up to maybe like round 8 or something. That's where Pattinson, you know, decided to crank it up a little bit there, and, you know, obviously Jenkins couldn't hang with him when he did so. But no, brilliant fight, and I'm happy that it's getting the plaudits that it deserves, because there's a lot of people out there that are saying it was, you know, a fantastic fight. And, you know, even people in America are saying how good of a fight it was. Obviously they saw it on DAZN, so happy that, you know, a next gen show is getting, you know, the plaudits that it deserves, because, you know, a good fight is a good fight, and it doesn't really matter what level it's at. And not to say both guys are low-level guys. Obviously, Jenkins a good fighter, and Pattinson, we don't know where his ceiling is. But I'm really happy that it's getting the recognition worldwide. And moving out now to the Walter Pyramid in Long Beach, California, USA. I've flown through this as quick as I could, Eddie, but I'm going to come to you here. Joseph Jojo Diaz, extremely disappointed. Now 32-4 with a draw, a split decision loss to Masito Gesta, the Filipino fighter, now 34-3 with 3 draws. It was over 10 rounds there, split decision in the end for Gesta. And yeah, I mean, he just outworked Diaz, who now, unfortunately, is on such a losing, you know, a terrible run that he's lost 3 fights in a row now.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I watched the fight, actually. I was kind of impressed with the Gesta. He was really good with the jab, Really kept him busy, kept Jojo Diaz busy. Like you could see Jojo was actually trying to stalk. He was trying to close the gap and was looking for that perfect punch. And with a guy who's busy, who's keeping jabs, surprise jabs, different shots, different feints and things like that on you, you have to be a little more active with your offense in order to be effective. But he just couldn't get a foothold. It was this guy just kept the jab in his face, kept him guessing. He never, every once in a while, he would get a nice shot off or would get a little busier, but it never was enough to really put really gain enough traction in the fight to really do anything, you know, and really win any rounds or enough rounds that that was going to make a difference. I just think that the kid fought a great fight, disciplined, tough. He surprised me. I didn't really know much about the guy, but now I'm impressed, and I want to see him fight again.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I didn't expect much from Gester. I really thought that Diaz would have this in the bag, and I thought, to be honest with you, boxing politics and the rest of it, if this is close, then they're going to give it to Diaz, and obviously one judge did. But I think, yeah, in the end, Gester was the rightful winner, and yeah, as you say, was very active, popping out that jab, using his feet, and he really frustrated Diaz, who really struggled to put together, you know, more than maybe two rounds he'd win in a row through those rounds. You know, like he was struggling to rack it up, and it wasn't consistent. He tried to come on strong in the later rounds, and even they were close rounds, but yeah, Gester gets the victory. But yeah, I really wasn't expecting that from him, you know. Obviously I've seen him, you know, lose to Jorge Linares, and he's pretty much really a guy that loses his biggest fights, so yeah, mad. So brilliant for him. He's beaten Joseph Diaz Jr. here, and in the fight before that he beat Joel Diaz Jr. So yeah, I don't know which other Diaz he's going to beat next, but couple in a row there, Jojo Diaz Jr. and Joel Diaz Jr. So no relation, of course, but yeah, funny side story there. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. The final thing for me to do is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated pro boxer and entrepreneur. It is, of course, Mr. Joe Fournier. Joe, welcome back on the show, my man. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's great to be back, buddy. You always call me when I got something exciting to talk about. Otherwise, you never check on me.
What a lie. But, Joe, we last did an interview back in April 2021, almost 2 years ago. How's things been, my man?
Great, yeah. The clubs have been doing great, opening up all over the world. Got three now. I'm going to be five by the end of the year. So, Bombardier, Tulum, Mykonos, Sardinia, Mexico City next, and then Madrid.
Wow, there we go. Been keeping busy. And like I say, last time we spoke, you were getting ready to fight on Triller against, you know, the reggaeton artist Raycon. Obviously, he wasn't a real boxer. He stepped into the ring with you. He was no match for you. KSI isn't regarded a real boxer. How confident are you that the outcome will be the same here, Joe?
Listen, at the end of the day, he's the best of the YouTube boxers. He's the fittest. He's the most athletic. He's probably the most powerful. You saw in his last fight against, you know, somewhat average MMA fighter, that, you know, put him, it's hard to knock someone out clean like that, you know what I mean? So he has good timing. He's got a good coaching team. I'm not taking him lightly because at the end of the day, I'm getting on a bit, aren't I? I'm 40. So I'm definitely going to train for it, as well as run my clubs. As usual, I just run my clubs and show up and knock everyone out. And I think he's going to be a handful, to be honest. I think, but a handful relatively to when he gets punched in the face by me, all that handful is going to kind of go away, isn't it? Because he's just not been hit that hard in his life. So it's easier to fight guys that just aren't durable like me. Like, you know, when you fight me, even David A, when I fought David A, he just knew he wasn't going to knock me out. So he just had to, you know you're in for a night of whatever round the bout is, you're going to have to go to town. So I'd be surprised if I don't catch him clean in six rounds, to be honest.
And Joe, you made a comment there that I'm going to, you know, repeat. You said that he's the best of the YouTube boxers. So you do rate him above the likes of Jake Paul?
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, I think that, from what Jake Paul's achieved, I think it's incredible what he's achieved. You know, everyone knows I make no bones. I'm not his biggest fan. But and he should have fought me 2 years ago, 3 years ago, after Raycon, when it was being negotiated. So I'm a bit irritated about that still. But if you actually put like for like, I mean, when he fought Logan Paul, he dropped him clean, and he beat him. You know, they fought twice and he beat him. And I think that Logan's better at the two brothers, to be honest. I think Logan's the, you know, bigger, stronger, more powerful hitter. So, yeah, I think KSI is better than Jake, to be honest. I think Jake's done it longer. Maybe he's a bit cleaner. But you see, when he's put under pressure to really perform, he didn't really do much against Tommy, did he? He kind of just kind of got bit. I don't see him winning a round in that fight. So I would say KSI would have done much better against Tommy. I don't think he would win, but I think he would have done much better than Jake.
And I want to ask as well, Joe, where did this stem from? Because as you mentioned, you and Jake Paul had a little bit of a history. You know, we knew the backstory to the beef that you guys had. But where did it stem from with KSI?
No, I was just one day. I was in Barcelona on holiday actually, and I saw them all, you know, scrambling for opponents and arguing about different opponents. And I said, listen, I got the profile. I can fight. And at the end of the day, if you really want to call yourselves real boxers, you've got to start fighting boxers. I was there before even Tommy and Jake, you know, were a thing. You know, I was there, like you said, back in 2021 when Snoop Dogg and Killer were trying to make the fight between me and Jake. So I've always said it, because one thing about YouTube boxing, it's crossover, but they never crossed over. And now it's starting to cross over, and you see people are engaging it, because how can you match yourself up as a boxer unless you're fighting a boxer?
Yeah.
You get what I'm trying to say? It's like me saying, I'm really fast at running, but I don't run track and field. Well, until you race, you know, Usain Bolt, how do you know how good you are?
Yeah. No, I understand.
Right. And then so I then kind of just put it out there. I said, listen, I'll fight Logan, I'll fight KSI, I'll fight anyone, just let me know. And then KSI bit a little bit, and then I kind of got in contact, his manager got in contact, and said, would you want to fight on Misfits? I said, I'd love to. He said, oh, you know, you should do like a warm-up fight. So we had a fight set up against a UFC fighter. He failed a brain scan, so I went to London anyway because I wanted to really, because you know, they were saying, oh, but he does want to fight you. He wants to take the next level up and all that. And I went to, flew to London. I was the alternate is what happened. Dylan Dennis had the contract. I had an alternate contract with KSI. When Dylan Dennis pulled out, they didn't give me the fight. They went with FaZe Clan. And I lost my mind because I just cut down weight. You know, I walk around at 200 pounds plus sometimes. And I cut down to fight at one, whatever it was, 177, 178. So I was furious. You made a guy die. I didn't get paid nothing, not a dime. And all they'd give me was my flight. So I'm like, I just wasted 50 grand on a training camp. And you guys never even kept your word. So I flew to London, got in the ring, and then he called me out. And I was just there, ringside. And so I jumped in and I said, no, well, you want to call me out? I'm here. Shake my hand. So he shook my hand. Then they bottled it for 2 months. You know, we were trying to find every which way out of it. I just kept stayed on him. And then I think he just got embarrassed into it. But I think it's the biggest mistake he's ever made. They're very smart, but I think it's a real, real mistake to take me on this early in your career. I don't know, mate. I wouldn't do it. So yeah. he's either got something that I haven't seen or no one's seen, or they made a mistake and they bit off more than they can chew. Because I would like to say I beat Tommy Fury all night long, and I think Tommy beats, you know, KSI. So I think there's a couple of levels apart here. But they signed the contract, so that's why I'm in such a good mood. Can't get out of it now, baby.
I want to come back to what you said there. But and this next question may sound incredibly uninformed, but you're a lot richer than KSI, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I just offered him 10 million. I said to him the other day, I said yesterday, New Year, I said, I'll give you 10 million. I'll give you $10 million to buy Misfits. I don't think it's worth more than $10 million. I think $10 million is real nice to buy the promotion. I'll give you $10 million to buy the promotion, because when I knock you out, it's worth 100 grand. So I'll give you $10 million now, take your dough and run. And I said, otherwise, I'm going to make you an offer for 100 grand the next morning.
And you know? Obviously, Joe, you know, with that being the case, with you having more money than KSI, I mean, you know, a lot of people from the outside, they look at this YouTube boxing and they say surely the only attractive thing about going into, you know, into this realm and fighting a YouTube guy is the money. But you obviously don't need the money. You've got a lot to lose, actually, in terms of your boxing credibility.
I'm getting paid hardly anything.
So what's the point? Because you've got a lot to lose.
I'll tell you why. Number one, I've always fought, from when I fought in the pubs back in the day before I turned professional, I never got paid there either. I fought because it's a good influence on me, boxing. I've always said this about everyone. That's why I don't really hate on them as long as they get in the ring. I only hate when they talk and don't get in the ring, like Dylan Dennis. Just talks a lot of shit, bottles it. But when you're just doing it to get in the ring, number one, you ain't drinking. So that helps me. I own nightclubs all over the world. There's always someone up for a beer. So I don't drink for a couple of months now, right? Two, it helps you your mental because you're training twice a day. You're in a healthiest version of yourself. I'm 40, I look 30. Because of that, you know what I mean? Because I'm not killing myself, not killing my body. Boxing's been a great influence on my life. It creates discipline. When I'm disciplined, I work harder. My companies do better, right? So there's a whole holistic effect of why I box. It's never been about the money, even when I was getting paid. You know, big money like I did against David or whatever. It's to do with just, I'm in camp now. I'm having a good time. I like the life of being in training camp. I like the press. I like talking to you. I like the leader. Also, what's great, the benefit that isn't just that with Misfits is the platform. It's one of the biggest platforms in the world. Whatever they want to say, you know, the pro boxers want to hate or whatever, can't deny it. I've had, since I've announced this fight, 126,000 people go to @JoeFournier, my Instagram, to look at my stories. Who else, right, with 207,000 followers, has 126,000 people look at their stories? Don't happen. So I feel like I'm a great mentor to these young kids, the youth, from business to sports to athletics to guiding your way. You see, if you follow me on Instagram, you get a lot of inspiration. A lot of people message me day in, day out. You really inspired me. You changed my outset and my perspective on life. All of the good stuff that I do, right? So to be able to have a voice then that is heard by, you know, 10 times more people that usually look at my story, well, why not? You know, and that's the benefit to fighting on Misfits is I've done a free fight deal, actually, and there's a rematch clause. So it could be a four fight deal with these guys. And it just builds my profile to actually do good, to actually motivate the youth, the young kids, they're thinking, shit, because guess what? It was only 9 years ago, yesterday, this weekend, 9 years ago, where I fought my first ever white-collar boxing fight. Can you imagine? In a pub in Camden. And I was selling tickets to my mates for 15 quid. I trained for 4 weeks with White Collar Boxing in London and just fought some random dude. And now I'm fighting, headlining, pay-per-view, The Zone, right, at Wembley. So if I'm not a motivation to the youth, to the kids out there on the streets doing the wrong thing, to go, you know what, if I could do it, why can't you do it? I did it at 30, started at 31. So if you're 16, 17, 18, if you just start grinding, you can put them knives down, you can put them guns down, you can leave that gang. And you can just get down the gym and just start training and be something one day. But then you can be 40 like me telling the other kids because it's a cycle, isn't it? So that's why Misfits is important. Now, although there's a big, I feel it's a big mistake on his part, I do appreciate the opportunity to put me on because I am going to knock him out because that's what I do. I knock people out. But he does bring my voice a lot bigger now to inspire others.
Yeah, no, well said, Joe, for sure. And you've answered one of my questions I was going to ask you in a minute. I was going to ask about if there were, if there was a rematch clause. You said there was. Obviously, the fight takes place May the 13th at Wembley Arena. What has negotiating been like as well, Joe? You said that for a couple of months they were a bit ghost. But how's it kind of been, you know, because they're obviously not fully, in this boxing world. It's new for them.
Listen, I'm literally, for what I earn, I'm fighting for nothing, the way I see it. So there was no, like, the financial negotiations were pointless. Just didn't even bother with it anymore. I was like, whatever. And then they made me go down to 180. Got to fight 180. They added their rehydration clause, of course, which they did with the other guys. But, you know, I'm a professional. So for me, those things don't make me freak out. Oh, I got to lose 25 pounds in 8 weeks. It's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? I can only cut 10 pounds. All right, even better. You know, like, you just diet. You know, we're disciplined. I'm disciplined in all aspects of my life. So I would scare off a lot of people. But for me, I think he's so mismatched that I'm going to really do some damage to him. You know what I mean? So there's nothing that could have... I basically just didn't end up agreeing to everything. I think they only gave me 4 ringside seats. I was like, all right, cool, great. Give me ringside seats. Let's go. Just send me the contract. You know, so yeah, it wasn't my finest negotiations. I think they've done a number on me, to be honest, but like that's not the point of this, is it? It was never, I was never doing it for the money. So, you know, yeah, all right, they want to squeeze every inch, let them squeeze every inch. Good luck. Like that. And you know what was nice about it is that lean means, you know, in their budget, they got more money for the up and coming fighters, the YouTuber kids, which you need it. So if I take a bit less, you know, or a lot less than what I wanted, nowhere near what I wanted, then cool, because that means that there's some more budget for the kids that do need it. You know what I mean? So I'm happy with what we ended up with, because I'm happy that the fight got done. But yeah, as a businessman, it wasn't really a negotiation. It was a take it or leave it from their side. So every single aspect of it, because they wanted an excuse to then not fight me. But I just went, all right, I'll take it. Then they were like, oh, fuck.
That brings back a memory. I don't want to go off topic, but there was Darren Barker when he was world champion. There was a guy that creeped into the top 15, and the guy wanted to fight him, and all he wanted was a very small amount of money, but he just wanted about 10 ringside seats. He just wanted peanuts. And Darren Barker said, oh, this guy's come to the table, he just wants peanuts, and all he wants is some ringside seats. I should fight this guy. And his trainer said, no, we're not going to fight that guy, because I've heard lots and lots of dangerous things about him. That guy was the relatively unknown at the time, Gennady Golovkin, and he thanks his trainer to this day that he didn't let him take the fight. But that's another story for another day.
His trainer's Tony Sims, right, Darren Barker?
Yeah, it was Tony.
Great coach. I trained with Tony back in the very, very beginning.
There we go. Shout out to Tony. But I want to say, Joe, you know, obviously there's a lot to compare when it comes to, you know, Jake Paul, KSI. You know, Jake Paul finally fought, you know, a real pro in Tommy, and he got found out. KSI fought that, you know, that Pineda. No disrespect to him. He's, you know, he's a journeyman, let's be honest. Obviously, you're undefeated, you know, in proper fights, 100% knockout ratio. Yeah, I don't really know what I was going to say, but it's such a dangerous thing, because there's no doubt in my mind that KSI is a smart guy. You said it. He's done incredibly well for himself. He stepped into boxing, which he didn't need to do. I respect him. But it's such a risk, because I think people still don't quite know everything about you. I mean, I know certain things people don't know. I think a lot of people have forgotten those sparring sessions with the likes of James DeGaw and others.
And Eubank Jr. Yeah, I think that's what I think they're banking on. They're banking on, I'm a bit old. And obviously, their go-to fight next to Jake is going to be KSI. That's a no-brainer, right? Because at the end of the day, they are the top two YouTube boxers, yeah? So they got to fight. So the fact that he lost to Fury, you know, there's more excitement probably if I fight Fury next. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because we're two pros, and, you know, like, we're going to, we've got a professional record on the line here, you know what I mean? So we're going to go at it. And that's two entertaining fights then, because if the two YouTubers then fight each other, the two pros then fight each other, that's where it should be at. So I think they needed to up his level. Because Jake is decent, like, he ain't a mug. You know what I mean? He did fine. Like, I thought that he did way better than I thought he would do against Tommy. I thought Tommy would knock him out. And you know, it was different. If I thought Tommy weren't trying to knock him out and just trying to get the ring rust off and just get some rounds in, yeah, which is an element I'm thinking about in this fight against KSI, I ain't really got no benefit dropping him in the first 10 seconds, because my next fight might be Tommy. Do you understand? I need to get the rust off myself. I ain't fought in 2 years since David. So, but Tommy was trying to fucking finish Jake Paul. He said it all the way through. So I think Jake done way better than I'd expected. Yeah. And then now KSI needs a tough fight. He does. From a coaching standpoint, he needs a tough fight. Because you wouldn't just put him in there with Jake. We've never done a hard round live on TV. Because, you know, sparring is different. But having sparred, you know, world-level guys, and then who I found the hardest to then who won the fight when they fought each other, isn't always the same, is it? No. Like when I sparred Eubank Jr. and I sparred James Agel, I really struggled with James Agel, to be honest with you. The way he switches stances, super fast, super awkward. I much enjoyed sparring Chris Eubank Jr., to be honest. But when they fought, Chris Eubank Jr. won. So sparring doesn't mean anything when it comes to a pro bout. And two guys are going to fight each other. KSI needs a hard fight. And I think they just think he just has enough maybe youth and fitness and all of that. But it's a six-round fight. I don't get it. First day I walked back in the gym, I did four rounds the other day. So I don't. It's not a war of attrition. It doesn't matter how fit he is. It doesn't matter if it's 20 rounds. We're only doing six. So what's his advantage? I don't understand.
Neither do I. That's what I'm saying. I don't get it. But
you're just hoping I'm old.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I haven't seen any chink in your armor. I don't think anyone has. So it just seems such a weird thing because they've been taking calculated risks this whole time. He's a smart guy, but I don't understand the risk in this of all people.
I think also one thing to put it in fairness, I deserve this fight because who else would KSI fought? Right, he's beat up all the YouTubers. There are no YouTubers left, right? So now he had to step up to a pro fighter in the pro ranks. Well, there was Tyrone Woodley that has a profile as a boxer. He's lost two in a row, got knocked out clean last. Why would he get this fight? What's the benefit to KSI fighting Tyrone Woodley? There's zero, right? A guy that's been beat by Jake Paul twice. So there's no value in him. Tommy Fury went the Jake route, so he's out of the game. Logan's his partner in Misfits, so he's out of the game. Who's left? You see what I'm trying to say? Which celebrity boxer who, you know, isn't in the elite ranks trying to win world titles, you know, like I was, you know, back in the day, trying to, you know, work up the rankings, who is now available that isn't signed? Like, no one. Like, you're not going to go and fight, you know, Liam Smith, are you?
No, that wouldn't be calculated at all. But Joe.
Right, so you're getting the best high. I remember I'm WBA international champion. Buatsi has still now. After me was Buatsi, right? So I was ranked number 10 in the world. I'm still undefeated. Who else but what they're thinking is he's 40. He's got ring rust. 2 years he's been out of the game. Everyone knows I like a party. So for 2 years I've been having a good time. So they're trying to factor all these things in. But I still punch hard as fuck. And when he eats a jab from me or a body shot, you know what I thought Raycon? He had six broken ribs. He ain't spoke to me since.
There's still people in Colombia that want you dead.
Yeah, I know. When I went there last time, I had to have like full armed like police escort everywhere I went, even to the strip clubs.
Joe, you said something interesting about perhaps not wanting to get the knockout, maybe to bank the rounds. I mean, I'm going to push you for a prediction. Do you get him out or do you go six?
You know, the thing is, it depends, right? He comes out super fast. Yeah. And he might walk into a knockout. But I would rather, personally, for my career, I would like to do a few rounds. I would like to do, like, because if you saw, like, Raycon, for example, when I had Raycon in front of me, I knew there was no danger. So I went in a rush. And I feel like once KSI feels the power, he's going to try and he's very awkward. Let's not mistake it, right? You know, when you get like a 1-2 basic, like Rocky Fielding type boxer, you know what you've got in your hands, yeah? So you know what's coming. It's a 1-2, 1-2-3. You know, I mean, they don't throw really awkward punches, you know, that real amateurish style. But KSI, you see his last knockout, went from a taekwondo stance to a flying overhand right on the southpaw with a finish with a left hook diving in square on. Well, let's say he's awkward. So you have to fire back when he does shit like that. You can't just tuck up because you could get caught yourself. So I'd like to do some rounds. I'd like to really hurt him, to be honest. I said it in the interview the other day. I want to make him cry. I want him actually to physically cry in the ring, just the pain. I want to really like bust him up. You know, Canelo just really gets you in your shoulders, and your elbows, and your ribs. You just really want to just give up. Like you see the lumps he takes out of people's arms. I really want to like just break him down so he just starts crying, just don't even want to come out again. That's how I want to just really like batter him, because if I knock him out in the first round, well, fucking that's obvious. Joe Fournier, fucking KSI, YouTuber, well done. What have you done there? Shouldn't even be fighting this guy. Whereas if I really put on a masterclass of boxing and I really batter this kid, then everyone's going to be like, that was class. You know, all my mates are going to laugh. And then the next fight, you know, then people are going to, you know, then they're going to warrant other big fights from that. If you're just knocking out in the first round, you say, oh, it was a lucky punch or whatever. You got to outclass these guys. And that's what it happened with Fury and Jake. He did outclass him, let's be fair. He did, although he showed he has no big punch power, he did put on a masterclass of boxing relative to Jake. So I would say is, you can't write off the knockout because he jumps in like that. And if I see you jump in, I'm throwing back. And then you really want to jump into one of my shots. Well, good luck. You know, I mean, I dropped Raycon for throwing a body shot that he ducked into. You know, so, but nah, would I like a nice long, you know, like a nice long fight, you know, and really make it, you know, work off the jab and really like get my eyes back and under the lights. It's going to be sold out, 15,000 people, whatever Wembley has. It's going to be a great atmosphere. I want to enjoy it. You know, there's not going to be many days out for me. I've done a free fight deal. So there's three more fights probably. And then, you know, could be the end. So I really want to enjoy it. Another one round, two round knockout ain't going to be that fun.
Well, there we go.
Just because I don't feel he's going to give me any danger.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if you actually go the distance, for the first time, obviously not counting the Hay fight. Just before we let you go, Joe, because I really do appreciate your time, I like to always throw it over to you just for some closing words to the listeners before we wrap it up, my man. So just take it away before I let you go.
Guys, tune in. May 13th, The Zone. You're going to watch me take away the whole of the YouTube boxing nation, because this guy is going to get put to sleep in the later rounds and he's going to come back to the pro game, baby.
There we go. Listen, Joe, as always, it's a pleasure speaking with you, my man. Best of luck May 13th, and we'll speak sometime afterwards.
All right, mate. Sounds good. Take care, pal. Bye-bye.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with the undercard announcement for Anthony Joshua versus Jermaine Franklin. Of course, Saturday, the 1st of April. Not long to wait now. On the undercard, we're going to see for the European middleweight title, Matteo Cignani getting in with Felix Cash. We're going to see a really good heavyweight fight here, I think, between Fabio Wardley and Michael Polite Coffey, who a lot of people were really, really high on until his career got derailed by Jonathan Rice. And obviously, in his last fight as well, losing to Hovhannissian, that was a shock as well. But there's been times in his career where he's looked real good. And, you know, he gets in with Wardley, who, you know, he's on a run, really. But I think this is the kind of fight that if Polite Coffey comes in, you know, in shape, this should get him excited. You know, if he beats Wardley, he gets big fights after that. So it's a must-win fight. You know, his career is absolutely in tatters at the minute, and he needs to win this fight. We're going to also see Austin Ammo Williams get in there with River Wilson Bent. That's a tough old fight, that, for River Wilson Bent. I haven't seen him fight since he lost to Hamza Shiraz. I was at that fight. So, I mean, he's had a nice quick win against Daryl Sharp, and now he gets in with Ammo Williams. Real tough one there. We're also going to see Campbell Hatton get in there with Lewis Fielding. We're going to see John Hedges on the card as well. That's about it, really. To be totally honest with you, the undercard isn't really up to the standards that we've seen in the past from Anthony Joshua undercards, but I guess it's not actually a pay-per-view fight. Obviously, DAZN is a subscription service, but it's not actually a pay-per-view. It comes with the subscription, so maybe that has to do with the lack of depth in that undercard there. What else do we have in terms of news? Just trying to have a look. This one's a big one as well. Luis Alberto Lopez will be defending his world title, his IBF featherweight world title, against Michael Conlan. That one to go down in Belfast on May 27th. So a homecoming there for Michael Conlan. That's obviously a massive fight, and happy for Conlan as well, to be honest with you, to get that opportunity. Obviously, we saw Luis Alberto Lopez beat Josh Warrington last time out, and he was quite impressive, and he's been over here before, obviously beat Isaac Lowe in the past, and yeah, now he gets in there with Conlan. I'm happy for Conlan, like I just said, but yeah, I mean, you know, he obviously lost to Lee Wood, come back against Miguel Mariaga, and then obviously got Karim Gwerthy out of there in spectacular fashion. And here we go. You know, he's back in only 11 rounds later. So you know, good for him, like I say, but he is the underdog, and, you know, obviously he's got everything in his favour in terms of home advantage. It's not too surprising to see that, but, you know, hopefully he can pull it off. Hopefully he can pull it off, because I know he's burning to be a world champion, and he had his chance against Lee Wood, almost had it in the bag till he got knocked out of the ring, and here we go. He goes again, gets another chance, didn't have to wait too long for it, so all the best to him. And let me just see if there's anything else. Oh yeah, this is a bit of a shame as well. It's actually devastating, but no date for it just yet, but it's going to be rescheduled for sometime in July, so I'm told. But that May 7th showdown in Japan with Stephen Fulton and Naoya Inoue has been postponed. Like I say, it's going to now take place sometime in July. It was actually Inoue who suffered an injury in training that's put the fight back. So, like I say, hopefully we get a more solid date on that. And it was a fight everyone was looking forward to seeing, and I'm sure it will still happen, but, you know, it's a shame though. And then finally, Boxer have announced a couple of shows. We're going to see Chris Billam Smith returning to Bournemouth to main event a stadium fight on May the 27th. No opponent just yet, but you know, I don't think we've got to think too hard. It's got to be a massive fight here. They're going to, like I say, a stadium. It is a 15,000 capacity stadium there. It's the Bournemouth football club ground. So I think the opponent's going to be announced, I think maybe later this week or potentially early next week, but obviously it's got to be a world title fight, I'd imagine. We're also going to see Josh Buatsi fight on May 6th. He gets in with Pavel Stepien. That's going to be in Birmingham. Adam Azim as well is going to be headlining York Hall. That's going to be June the 10th. And Ben Whitaker as well, his comeback has been confirmed. Tyler Denny back in action, and Lauren Price as well. So I don't want that to come across too confusing. Let me actually just quickly name the fighters, the main events, and the undercards, just so no one's confused. So the Chris Billam card, no opponent just yet for him, but on the undercard we're going to see Isaac Chamberlain, and we're going to see him get in with Mikel Lawal. So that's a fantastic fight there, over 12 rounds for the British Cruiserweight title. And those other dates, like I just mentioned there, Josh Buatsi against Pavel Stepien, Lauren Price on the card, Ben Whitaker on the card, Tyler Denny on the card as well. And then the other one, like I say, Adam Azim to headline at York Hall. No opponent just yet for him, and no undercard announced for that one. So stay tuned. But that's about it, though, for the news. Moving on now to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. It takes place in Canada. It takes place tonight in Canada. I'm talking to you now on a Thursday. This podcast more than likely will go out on a Friday, so I'm saying tonight, but by the time you listen to this, the fight might have already took place. It takes place at the Montreal Casino in Quebec, Canada. Over here, Christian and Billy, 23-0. It's over 10 rounds here. He gets in with Carlos Gongora, who's 21-1. I really like this fight. I'm quite impressed with him, Billy, and I was one of the few people, by the way, that said Mbili wouldn't get Vaughn Alexander out of there in his last fight, and he did go the distance, and not many people saw that one coming. So I was quite impressed with him, even though he didn't knock him out like a lot of people expected him to. I mean, Vaughn Alexander is just super duper tough, and Mbili I think, you know, can win this fight against Gongora, but he's close with the bookies. They're not entirely sure. Gongora can certainly crack, and obviously his one loss came to Lerone Richards, and Lerone just had a style that Gongora could not, I want to say, use a Mike Tyson slogan, impregnate. He couldn't impregnate his style. And I don't know what it's going to be like when he gets in with Mbili, because Mbili can be hit. Lerone Richards can't be hit almost. And it should be quite interesting there, over 10 rounds for the WBA International and WBC Continental America's super middleweight titles. Also on the card, Simon Keane, 22-1, gets in with friend of the show Eric Molina, 29-8 these days. I mean, look, let's be honest. We know what's going to happen here. Simon Keane's record is quite impressive. You know, he can certainly bang. And unfortunately, at this point in Molina's career, you know, 8 losses these days, all 8 by knockout. You know, they've all pretty much been early. And, you know, he gets in with Simon Keane, like I say, 22-1 with 21 KOs. In his last fight, bang someone out in a round, and a lot of the time banging people out in round 2s and 3s and 4s, you know. So I'm expecting him to just absolutely walk through Eric Molina, unfortunately. But I'd love to see Molina pull it off. I mean, like I say, really classy guy. Some people forget he was still going to his job teaching disabled children while in training camp, getting ready to fight Deontay Wilder. That's something we should never forget. The guy has a heart of gold, but unfortunately he's not very talented, and he seems to be, you know, totally finished. I think he retired and came out of retirement, took a few more paydays, getting banged out again. It's sad to see at this point. Moving out now though to the Bolton Whites Hotel. This one's going to be live on Channel 5, by the way, in the UK. On the undercard, Sultan Zorbek, 13-0, gets in with Facundo Arce, who's 15-9 with 2 draws. That's over 8 rounds there. We're also going to see in the main event, friend of the show, Lyndon Arthur, 21-1. It's for the IBO World Light Heavyweight title, the vacant title. He gets in with Brian Suarez, who's 18-1 with 17 KOs. So something tells me that this one probably won't be going the distance. Obviously, you know, I'm looking at that guy's 17 KOs, hasn't got anyone on the record that I recognize, and he did get banged out in one round back in June of last year in the only fight he's had really against anyone of a decent level. Got in there with Albert Ramirez. Yeah, so, you know, I'm expecting Lyndon Arthur to beat him, to be honest with you. I will say they both share a common opponent in Walter Sequeira. And Walter Sequeira got knocked out in just one round by Suarez, whereas Sequeira, I believe, went further than that with Arthur. Yeah, went 6 rounds with Arthur. So I don't know if you can read much into that. But yeah, anyway, I don't see it going the distance there. That's it for that one. Moving out now to this one. It's a bit of a weird one. It goes down at the Domo Alcalde in Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico. Over here, it's going to be live on DAZN. It's just really it should be an easy comeback fight for Jose Zepeda. Don't think he's fought since he lost to Regis Progre. And he gets in here, you know, in a homecoming back in Mexico, gets in here with Neeraj Goyat, who is 17-3 with 2 draws. I think at one point he was linked with fighting Amir Khan, and the fight, for whatever reason, didn't happen. You know, this guy lost to Sergio Martinez back in 2018. He's not a very good fighter, the Indian fighter. So, yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. Must just be an easy comeback fight there. Moving out now to Bangkok in Thailand. Over here, we're going to see Wisaxwell Wangek, 50-6 with 1 draw. This is Suresaket Sorungvisai, for those that don't know him, by Wisaxwell Wangek. He goes by a few names. He goes by another name on this show. We call him the Rodent Eater because he does like to eat rodents. And he gets in with Pipat Chaiporn, who is 48-16 with 2 draws. That is over 8 rounds there. All the best there to Wisaxwell Wangek, Suresaket Sorungvisai. Moving now to this one. It takes place at the Manchester Arena in Lancashire, United Kingdom. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. What do we have? Let's start with the undercard, I think. A few names on it. Let's start with this one. Shaquille Thompson, 9-0, gets in with Robert Talarak, who's 27-17 with 3 draws. Got a sneaky suspicion that that one could go the distance. It's only a 6-rounder. Karis Artingstall, 2-0, gets in with Lindsay Bukzinski, who is 4-1. That's over 6 2-minute rounds. Again, I think that's probably going to go the distance. We've got Samuel Antwi, 14-2. In a 6-rounder here against Omir Rodriguez, who's 13-4 with a draw. We've got Aaron McKenna, 15-0. He gets in with Lucas Ndofaluma, who's a former foe of Bradley Ray. That is over 8 rounds there. Ndofaluma's record, 22-6. he gave Bradley Ray a bit of a tough fight, if I remember correctly. But yeah, Aaron McKenna should win that one. Also on the card, we're going to see Callum Simpson, 10-0, getting in there with Celso Neves, who's 9-3 with two draws. Elsewhere on the card, again, we're going to see Fraser Clark getting in there with late replacement Bogdan Dinu. Obviously, Fraser Clark, 5-0. It's an 8-round of this. I don't see it going 8 rounds. Bogdan Dinu's been banged out every time he's actually, you know, been in a step up. I think he, yeah, lost to Jurel Big Baby Miller, Kubrat Pulev, Daniel Dubois, Kevin Lorena. Been banged out in most of them within 4 rounds. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think Fraser Clark's got the power of a Dubois or anything like that. But, yeah, there's no way in the world it's going 8 rounds. No way. Fraser Clark by knockout, easy. Elsewhere on the card, we're going to see a good one here, actually. Michael Gomez Jr., 18-1, getting in there with Levi Giles, who's 13-0. It's for the vacant English super featherweight title there over 10. But all eyes really to the main event. Lawrence Okolie, 18-0. Defending his WBO cruiserweight world title against David Light, who's 20-0. Again, I'm going to just be honest. I haven't seen David Light fight before, but from what I'm hearing, he's you know, people are expecting him to get banged out in like 2 or 3 rounds max. He's from New Zealand, 6'1.5". I saw him do a little bit of pad work that I thought looked really bad, but I don't like to read too much into the pad work and stuff. But he's got himself obviously a world ranking, done that through picking up, you know, vacant WBO global and WBO international titles last time out. He beat Brandon Glanton, actually. So, you know, that is a notable win there. He did that in the States as well. So, you know, that was I guess, yeah, a good win, obviously. You know, looking at that on paper, took his O, beat him by split decision over 10. But he was down in that fight. And obviously, this is a mammoth step up here against Lawrence Okolie, who's huge for cruiserweight. We all know that. Can really punch, has really transformed his career from being a little bit hard to watch at times into being quite exciting. But, you know, yeah, I mean, David Light, I think, will be light work for Lawrence Okolie. Moving out now to the Telford International Centre in Telford, Shropshire, United Kingdom. This one, I'm guessing, is going to be on BT Sport. Let's start with the undercard. We're going to see Moses Itauma, 1-0. Will his fight go over 1 round here? He gets in with the undefeated 2-0 with 1 draw, Ramon Ibarra. It's over 4 rounds. Itauma is 9-1 to win this fight on points, by the way. So they're so sure he's going to bang this guy out. I don't know if this guy's as bad as his debut opponent when the guy literally went down off the first punch. Also on the card, we're going to see Raven Chapman, 5-0, getting in there with Linda Letcher, who is 15-5 with 2 draws. That's over 10 2-minute rounds for the WBC International Featherweight title. We're going to see Nathan Heaney, 16-0, getting in there with Jack Flatley. Again, 20-3 with a draw for the vacant WBA Continental Middleweight title. Nathan Heaney, you know, in the fight the first time round, obviously was winning actually against Flatley. And a lot of boxing insiders fancied Flatley for the upset. But to be honest with you, I think that Nathan Heaney started the fight really, really well. And it was apparently part of the game plan for Jack Flatley to come on strong late on. And obviously we didn't get to see the later rounds because a cut caused the contest to be ended prematurely. It went down as a technical decision for Nathan Heaney. And I didn't think we'd see the rematch, to be honest with you. But both guys have gone for it. Both guys are back here in immediate rematches. So, well, actually, I will say that Flatley's had one win in between. Nathan Heaney hasn't. So I think this is, you know, as exciting as it was first time round. And still there are people picking Flatley. Elsewhere on the card as well, we've got Andrew Kane, 10-0, fighting here for the WBC International Silver Super Bantamweight title. He gets in with Iron Up Baluta, who is a tough guy, but Andrew Kane's been banging everyone out. 10-0, 9 KOs. He gets in with Baluta, obviously way been around the block, 15-4, never been stopped. Barely been hurt, to be honest with you. Been in there with obviously Brad Foster, David Oliver Joyce, TJ Doheny, Michael Conlon, Liam Davies, amongst others. And I think that it could be quite exciting, actually. But I wasn't impressed with Baluta in his last fight against Liam Davies. He was awful, but I think Liam Davies was very impressive that night. So for me, I'm saying that I think Andrew Kane wins this one on points, and I think that's a bit of a that might be quite good, that price with the bookies, because I don't think he's going to get Baluta out of there, but we'll have to wait and see. Should be a good one. And also on the card as well, Jason Cunningham as well, 31-7. It's for the vacant WBO International Super Bantamweight title. He gets in with Miguel Gonzalez, who's 33-3. I feel like there's about 20 different Miguel Gonzalez's in boxing, but Jason Cunningham, he apparently had a fight scheduled for April against Liam Davies. That can't be happening. There's no way he's fighting both guys there in the space of 4 weeks. No way in the world, especially when realistically he's probably not going to get Gonzalez out of there. We'll have to wait and see, but I mean, yeah, he's coming off that loss last time out to Zolani Tete. I was at that fight and it was a bad knockout. He was, you know, he was battered that night by Tete, who has subsequently failed a drugs test, I believe, and that's all up in the air. But anyway, Cunningham was on a hell of a run. He gets in with Miguel Gonzalez. Miguel Gonzalez, the only thing that concerns me is, you know, he's been stopped twice in his three losses, but it's been in good company. It's been to Andrew Maloney and it's been to Jerwin Ancajas, but they have been in recent times. Maloney was, well, I mean, I say recent times. Maloney was 4 years ago. Jerwin Ancajas was two and a bit years ago, but I don't think he's the same fighter he was maybe 6-7 years ago, if that makes any sense. So, been around the block now. You know, lost his O to Paul Butler back in 2013, and again that one was almost near world level, so he's been floating around for a long enough time. And I don't know what Jason Cunningham's gonna be like. You know, he's got seven losses now, and that one was brutal last time to Tete. So I actually think Gonzalez is worth a small punt at about 3-1 there for the upset, especially if Cunningham really is going ahead with that Davies fight, which I just can't see it happening, but I haven't seen any clarification, so I don't know what to go by. But anyway, all the best to Jason Cunningham. Got nothing against him at all. All the best to everyone there. Moving out now to the Save Mart Arena in Fresno, California. Over here, we're going to see Sunisa Estrada, 23-0. She gets in with Tina Reprecht, who is 12-0 with a draw. I've given Sunisa Estrada a hell of a lot of praise in the past, but yeah, I like this fight. It's a good one. It's for the WBA and the WBC world minimum weight titles. Reprecht is the WBC champion, so it's a unification here between two undefeated females. Nothing bad about that. Should be a good one over 10 two-minute rounds. And the main event, Jose Ramirez, 27-1. He gets in with Richard Comey, which is quite an interesting fight, I think. 30-4, Richard Comey with a draw. Friend of the show. I'm hoping that he can get the job done here, but I think it's a tough ask. Don't think Comey's had the best time since moving up from lightweight up to 140, you know. I think his best days really were at lightweight, but you know, when he lost to Teofimo Lopez in the fashion that he did, he decided that really he needs to move up. And he hung around for that beating as well, I should say, before he moved up. I think he kind of moved up and then kind of went back down for the Lomachenko fight. Took a beating in that fight. It was quite life-changing, really, against Lomachenko. And then, yeah, obviously boxed Pedraza, and that one ended in a split draw over 10, a close fight. Gets in with Ramirez. I like Ramirez as a person, but you know, there's a few times I think he's lost fights and been lucky to get the decision. I can't believe that both guys in their last fights both boxed Jose Pedraza. That's crazy to think Pedraza boxed as well, what, a couple weeks ago or whatever, to Arnold Barboza. He's been more active than these guys have. But yeah, I mean, Ramirez only fought the one time since losing to Josh Taylor, and that was almost 2 years ago now. Hasn't been very active. I think he actually lost to Victor Postol as well, the fight before Josh Taylor. So, I don't know, man. I think you'd have to favour Ramirez because he's massive, you know, at the weight. But yeah, Comey's got a chance. I'd love to see him pull it off, but he's a rightful underdog here. Did you want to give anything on that, Eddie, about Ramirez and Comey? Or,
well, I mean, yeah, I haven't seen that fight, what he did, that he had with
Lomachenko?
No, with Josh Taylor. Ramirez.
Ah, right.
Yeah, now that I look back, that was a while ago. That was that wasn't his last fight.
He's had one since then.
One since then. So, I mean, it's just inactivity sometimes can really do bad things to you. You know what I mean? Even in the worst thing was the fight with Taylor, and he lost that fight. I'm not sure what happened in the other fight. So, I don't know. I really don't know. And Comey, when who was Comey in with last time?
I remember both guys boxed Pedraza last time out. Got a draw, and Ramirez obviously got the win.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. You know what I mean? They're both good fighters. They're both tough guys. I mean, I'm really not sure. I haven't seen Comey in a while, so. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't even know. I guess I would favor Ramirez. You know what I mean? He's still a good fighter. I mean, you know, him losing the fight with Taylor. What is wrong with me? You would think I took a lot of punches, I guess, huh? But no, yeah, the Josh Taylor, but he's still a really good fighter. Obviously, won the last fight, so I mean, I would favor him. Interesting fight, you know what I mean. I'm gonna try to watch it. I'm not gonna make any promises, but yeah, it'll be. I feel it's gonna be a pretty interesting fight.
And moving out now to the final card to mention. It takes place at the MGM Grand, Las Vegas, Nevada. Let's of course start with the undercard. Chris Colbert, 16-1, gets in with Jose Valenzuela, who is 12-1. The bookies have got this really, really, really close. I don't feel like I've seen Valenzuela fight before. I think there's a couple of Valenzuelas floating around. Just looking for his record, beat Austin Dule, beat Francisco Vargas. That rings a bell. Got him out in one round. That rings a bell. I think I actually bet on Vargas to win that fight, and he lost in the first round. But in his last fight, though, he got banged out in three rounds by Edwin De Los Santos. And he gets in with Chris Colbert. Like I say, the bookies have got it super close, and they slightly favour Colbert, who again is coming off a loss to Hector Luis Garcia. So both guys coming off losses on the undercard there. All the best to both men. We've also got Jesus Ramos, 19-0. He gets in with Joey Spencer, who's 16-0. So somebody's O must go there. We had someone on the podcast a few weeks ago who said they've been training with Ramos, and I can't remember who it was now. But, Ramos coming off that win last time out against Luke Santamaria, who's certainly upset the odds a few times. And I think Ramos is a good fighter, to be honest with you, and I'm not sure where his ceiling is. But Joey Spencer, I mean, he gets a lot of, criticism and stuff. People say he's boring and stuff like that. But he's a good fighter as well, so I think that's a really good fight. I wonder who the favourite is in that one. Oh, yeah, they've got it to Ramos. Not too wide. Okay, and Cody Crowley as well, 21-0. The Canadian based in Las Vegas. He's the guy that took the O away from Quadratillo Abdukukurov last time out, beat Josecito Lopez, although of course he's not what he used to be. Gets in with Abel Ramos, 27-5 with two draws, coming off a loss last time out to Luke Santamaria. I told you that he likes to upset the apple cart, that guy. But yeah, Abel Ramos as well was able to retire Omar Figueroa, of course, which was sad to see. Obviously, I'm a friend of Figueroa's, but yeah, that was sad to see. But it's a good fight. It's a good test, actually, I think, for Cody Crowley, who obviously I'm pretty sure is near the top rankings, you know, at welterweight. I'm pretty sure he's trying to close in on a world title fight. So yeah, it's an interesting fight. It's a risky fight, actually. But yeah, Abel Ramos will bring it. He will come to win, and he'll make it exciting, I think. And the main event now, Eddie, it's a cracker. It really is. For the WBC Interim World Super Middleweight title, I remember when there was whispers that this fight could be in the works, and we were excited at the time. It's now finally here this weekend, not long to wait. David Benavidez 26-0, Caleb Plant 22-1, the one lost to Canelo Alvarez in a good fight. I'm gonna come straight to you, man. I'm gonna come straight to you.
Well, thank you, Joe. No, this is something that we've been talking about. We've been looking forward to this for a while. And, we, you know, when we first talked about it, I still really haven't moved on what I'm expecting to happen on that fight. I like Caleb Plant, really good technically, good speed, good boxing ability. But at this point, man, I'm looking at Benavidez. He's busy. He's tall. He's a big, strong, aggressive, tough kid. You know what I mean? And he just comes to bang. So as good as Caleb Plant is, and, you know, obviously he has power, I don't think some of us really thought in the past, you know, after seeing what happened with Durrell. And he can box, so he can walk Benavidez into shots. I'm not saying that can't happen. And he's not a small guy, but he's just not, you know, the size of Benavidez totally. And, you know, just because Benavidez has that, you know, I don't want to say dad bod, but he's not, you know, like all cut up and shredded. He's still, you know, strong, tough, aggressive, and he's not a terrible boxer. He's not a bad boxer at all. He just is an aggressive guy who wants to, he wants to bring the fight to you. So that kind of works in Caleb Plant's favor to a degree, because it seems that Caleb Plant likes, you know, wants guys to come to him. And that's his style of, you know, boxing, cute kind of style. So, you know, and it can play into his hands, but I just think the kind of pressure and the kind of pace and the power and the aggressiveness that he did, Benavidez is going to bring is just going to be a lot. It's going to be a hell of a lot. And I'm just not sure Caleb Plant's going to be able to set the traps necessary to get, you know, to get the win. You know what I mean? I don't foresee him knocking out Benavidez or in one of those situations where he catches him with a good counter shot or anything like that. I mean, it can happen. It's not impossible, but I really haven't seen him in trouble like that, you know, since watching him. So it's just, it's hard to see it until it happens. You know what I mean? It's hard to see these things happen until it just happens. So, incredible fight. I'm so looking forward to it. This one, I'm going to say it, Joe, I'm not going to miss this one. I'm going to make sure I find time to watch this one.
Well, you know, I like to play devil's advocate on this podcast sometimes, Eddie. And listen, both guys are friends of the show. Obviously, I've got a soft spot for Caleb Plant, you know, knowing his story. David Benavidez is a monster. You know, he is a monster. And I've always, like, loved watching him fight. Such an exciting style. You know, he is all action. And I think, you know, he does want these big fights. And he's obviously been calling out the big names for a long, long, long time now. He sparred everyone when he was 15, 16. Years old, you know, sparring with Canelo, sparring with Golovkin and others, and you know, he sparred everyone there is to spar. And the only knock that people have had on Benavidez is his resume. When it comes to sparring, his resume is impeccable, but when it comes to actually fighting, his resume has been open to, you know, to criticism. And, you know, you got to remember last time out, boxed David Lemieux, you know, it was a terrible, terror. I can't even believe that fight actually got sanctioned, you know. Kyron Davis before that, which was a bit of a tough fight till he got him out of there. Ronald Ellis before that. Roma Alexis Angulo. Anthony Durrell. Jay Leon Love. The two back-to-back fights with Ronald Gavril. People have been quite frustrated because we've known for years that this guy is a talent. We've seen the highlight reel knockouts. We've seen the exciting clips. But there has, like, the resume hasn't matched the expectations. We've seen him do this stuff to mediocre fighters. We haven't seen him do it to top level fighters, and that has always been the question mark. This is two elite fighters going at it here, and I think Caleb Plant is so underrated so underestimated. And I actually think his boxing brain is right up there. I really do. And he's proved that to me in recent times. Obviously, last time out, it was very personal with Anthony Durrell, and you know, it was a fantastic knockout to end things. But let's not get carried away. You know, Durrell isn't what he once was. The fight before that with Canelo Alvarez, a fight where he put up a really good fight actually, till he ended up getting stopped. You know, his record, his resume, it's not fantastic either. But these are two, like I say, elite fighters, and it's we've seen him fight Canelo in Caleb Plant. We've seen him give him a good fight till he got stopped. We've Benavidez, we just haven't seen him at this level. You know, they've both boxed Anthony Durrell. I'm throwing him out of the argument here. But other than that, there's question marks. And basically what I'm trying to say to you is I'm making a case for Caleb Plant. I'm not saying he's going to win. I'm not saying I'd bet on him with confidence. But what I am saying is Caleb Plant to win on points is 5-1. And I think that's crazy.
Yeah. I can't disagree with you on that, Joe.
This is like Tommy Fury, Jake Paul price again.
Yeah. What did I say about that, Joe? But, hey, listen, you know, if you're going to bet and you're looking for that underdog, get me a couple dollars kind of bet, that's not the worst idea, is to put it on Caleb Plant to win by decision. You know what I mean? I don't see him stopping Benavidez, and, you know, but I can see him possibly getting him to, like I said, fall into some of those traps. Use that boxing brain that you said he has, Joe, because he does. He has a hell of an IQ. He knows how to use range. He knows what counter shots to throw. You've seen it with Canelo. Canelo's as good a boxer there is in boxing. So when you think about what we've seen Caleb Plant up against and how he's dealt with it, he's always dealt with it better than most would expect. You know what I'm saying? Even with Durrell. You know what I mean? After Durrell got the knockout, people was thinking, oh, maybe he's going to give Caleb Plant a good fight. And look what Caleb Plant did. You know what I mean? He's always done well in the face of the detractors and the people who just didn't think he was, you know, going to be up to snuff. And he's done it. So it's not a terrible idea if you want to make that bet, because he is a good enough fighter to do that. I just see Benavidez is... And it's hard to say, because Benavidez, like you said, he hasn't faced the competition, right? But, you know, it's not like everybody's just can't wait to fight him. They haven't. It's not like they're, you know, looking, hey, I'll sign the contract with the guy right now. They're not looking for that. They don't want that work, to be honest. So he's got to fight who's going to be in front of him. You know what I mean? He's got to fight. Some of these guys are desperate for money or desperate or want to get to the top level too. And they just say, the hell with it. I got to fight whoever I got to fight. And he had no choice, you know, I mean, and they have no choice. But, you know, some of these other guys, to be honest, are just really trying to protect what they have already. And they don't want to risk it against a guy like Benavidez, because they just don't really know for sure whether they're going to be able to beat him. So you got to give it to Caleb Plant for stepping up to the plate. And he really believes he's going to win. So, like I said, I agree with you, Joe. It's not a terrible bet. Not at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's close to a 50-50 fight. Obviously, Benavidez has got that style that I could see overwhelming Plant, but then Plant has the brains where I could see him outsmarting Benavidez. You know, so I think it's a brilliant fight. Cannot wait to see it. If Benavidez walks through Plant though, by any chance, then. That's a mega statement. A mega statement. If he can get him out within like four rounds or something mad like that, wow. I mean, I don't see that happening. I think we're going to see some rounds here, but I think it's going to be a brilliant, brilliant fight. And I'm so happy that it's happening. Obviously, this one here, we've got Joshua next week. I don't think that his fight is particularly a great fight, but you know, the big fights are coming back, and they're coming back week after week, I think now, for a few weeks on the trot, which is great to see. But we're going to start here with this one. It's a brilliant fight. Best of luck to both guys. But yeah, I think it's either Benavidez knockout or Caleb Plant points. And Caleb Plant points 5-1 for me is massively overpriced and very possible. So we'll see. But I think it's going to be a cracker either way. It always is when Benavidez is involved. Oh man, cannot wait. But anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part, then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, I did the news, and we've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 388 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A big shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated boxer and entrepreneur, Mr. Joe Fournier. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in this week. A shout out as well to our sponsors, Manscaped. Remember to visit www.manscaped.com and use that promo code BOXHARD, all one word, for 20% off plus free shipping. But that's about everything from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.